In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow. There's a very common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there are several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Since Jan 21, the cost of living is up 17.9%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now above $34 trillion, causing many to worry when the house of cards will come crashing down. A presidential election year that'll have massive implications on the future of this country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Text STRANGE to 989898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold, too. Just text STRANGE to 989898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
Welcome back to another edition of Strange Planet. A few years ago, I spoke with I guess I would describe him as a minimalist filmmaker who was also involved in the music scene, in the Canadian music scene. And he produced a documentary on one of my favorite subjects, and that is the whole Paul is Dead legend that continues to live on this day. It's remarkable how that all started almost by word of mouth. Think of this, you know, more than 50 years ago before the internet, how a rumor like that and a legend could take off, and it did. It's an absolute social phenomenon, and it was a documentary by Mitch Fillion, and I hadn't heard from him in a while, and then I got a direct message on Twitter from Mitch that he had been working had finished a new documentary and about another topic near and dear to my heart, and near and dear to many of your hearts, whether you're a Canadian or whether you were just inspired by the Freedom Convoy that rolled into Ottawa late January, early February, and stayed for about 3 weeks in the nation's capital before the Emergencies Act was invoked. And we're here to talk about that documentary. But before we get to Unacceptable Views, and we'll tell you how you can screen it, I want to introduce you once again to Mitch Fillion, and he's here to give us an update on what he's been through the last couple of years. I mean, we've all been through the ringer with the pandemic, but it's also hit him especially hard in a number of ways. Mitch, Welcome back. How are you?
Thanks for having me on. Doing pretty well. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So as I mentioned, you had a career filming live music.
Yeah.
You'd worked with thousands of artists from all over the world. You had a popular YouTube channel. The pandemic hit. It affected you as it did many millions of Canadians. You were deemed non-essential. But then it got worse. What happened?
Well, at the start of the pandemic, let me just backtrack a little bit. I had a channel. We had crossed paths actually earlier than the Paul's Dead interview. You had kind of moderated some of the alien cosmic expos that I was there filming. So that was the first time I kind of learned about you and your show. I had that channel mainly to cover the alien cosmic expo stuff. And I did some interviews with alien abductees and the Paul's Dead documentary and that sort of thing. But after kind of years of covering the alien stuff, I got a little bored of it. There was nothing new coming out, you know, it was all the same stories. And, then the pandemic hit and, I was one of the non-essential workers. So I had a lot of extra time on my hands and, I was all for the 2 weeks to, you know, slow the spread and all that, but it soon became pretty obvious that there was kind of a more nefarious, this is something playing out that wasn't really clear to a lot of people. And I think the biggest red flag was I also had a series I was working on called Friends of Epstein. So I was following all this stuff coming out about Bill Gates and, their relationship. They had a relationship between 2011 and 2013, where they kind of hung out a bunch.
Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah.
So Bill and Gates were hanging out and he stayed late into the night. Some nights there was one night, there was some former Swedish, Miss Sweden or something was there with her daughter and he stayed late into the night with them too. And, his science advisor for the Gates Foundation ended up being in Epstein's will. He was, one of the three executors. So that was kind of weird too, right? The Gates Foundation, I think, kept contact with Epstein up until late 2017. So this is all after Epstein's been convicted of, sex with young children and all this stuff. And he's been to jail. So, I had seen that Netflix documentary that's talking about, it was mainly focused on his and Trump's relationship, right? But I was like, there's a lot more to this story. There's a lot more friends that aren't included in this documentary that were a lot closer with Epstein. So, at the beginning of 2020, I started to make this Friends of Epstein series that included an episode on Bill. And, the episode on Bill is just basically saying like, why are we, trusting this guy with global health policy? Like he had kind of become a head of state at the World Health Organization. And there was actually this term they coined for him, coined for his sway over public health. And that was the big chill or the Bill chill. So, just seeing his failed vaccine programs, the DTP vax killed more children than the disease it targeted. And, he spent billions on polio and cases are up. There's actually more cases of vaccine derived polio than wild polio. And that's even admitted in, his Netflix documentary on the last episode. The director says, billions of dollars spent on polio and cases are up, So I was like, why are we trusting this guy? He's not a doctor. And he had these close ties with Epstein. He talks about how the, planet is overpopulated. So I kind of put out that big warning there. And I'm a natural health practitioner. So I also put out the early treatment protocol for COVID, which I had every right to, I'm just recommending vitamins and I'm a natural health practitioner and just recommending eating healthy. But, it's the same protocol that now Dr. Peter McCullough and others are recommending still years later. And so that was kind of the stuff that I had, that I was putting out in 2020. I put out a video early on debunking the wet market narrative, just due to the gain of function properties of the virus. And, knowing Fauci had funded research at the lab 30 minutes away from this supposed wet market where it all, where they said it came from. So that was the content I had out there. And a bunch of my friends in the music community stumbled upon it. And, I'm very polite and fact-based when I do my videos, always provide sources. And they saw the channel and they're like, he's a QAnon racist conspiracy theorist. And they got together and they wrote this anonymous email to pretty much every client I'd ever worked with, every band, record label, publicist. And the email stated things like, he promotes hatred towards all non-white people. And he's a COVID denier and anti-Semite, all this stuff that there was no proof of, you know? And then an NDP politician picked it up. And basically they were just, they didn't go to the channel themselves and watch any of the videos. They were just kind of trusting this anonymous email that, you know, is basically smearing me, calling me a racist and all that.
And it's me to, you know, I was, putting together my Coast to Coast, bumper music, for this coming weekend. And I picked a tune by Van Morrison called Where Have All the Rebels Gone, which I love that song. And it's so, and that's what he's talking about. All of these musicians, whether it's Neil Young threatening to quit Spotify because of Joe Rogan taking ivermectin or Joni Mitchell joined in, all of these,
Punk is great.
Rage Against the Machine got back together, went on a world tour, and Rage Against the Machine were insisting that you had to be vaccinated to attend their concert. What is going on with, where is that rock and roll ethos? Where, well, they're all sellouts.
Yeah, I was a bit naive, I think, thinking that, you know, if my musician friends did stumble upon my channel, they would be open to it. And, you know, I'm exposing like these government gangsters and big pharma, but it was the total opposite. You know, they saw what I was doing and just said like, you know, your content is going to cause death. Some of my friends said that, and they said it's Nazi weirdness. And it was just ridiculous.
Nazi weirdness. Well, you know, that's the problem with being too early, being right and being too early, being right, yeah. Being ahead of the curve, because just about everything that you've talked about right there is turned out to be true. Now we have the Department of Energy admitting that it was leaked, although a recent guest on Tucker Carlson has...
I saw that, yeah. She's saying that it was probably...
That it was deliberate.
Yeah, because what was she saying? Like, if you've worked in one of those labs, you know that it's pretty fail-safe for stuff getting out or something. She's like...
Right, yeah. Right. And... what else was I, what else have you, what else have you been right about? What else have I been right about? Well, so much vaccines.
Well, you know, they said, I think, was it April, 2021, the CDC director said, if you have these vaccines, you can't catch COVID, you can't get sick. And Biden repeated that. And, you know, at the same time, April, 2021, I put out a video saying, no, you know, you can catch it. Like we had Israel to kind of look to, right? They were kind of the guinea pigs getting the vaccine first. So, you know, by the time it came over here, and by the time my age group was eligible to get it, like if you're following my channel, there's no way you should have gotten the vaccine. You know, I tried my best and I tried to be polite and fact-based, but I was just attacked with these racist smears. It was wild.
So you were canceled, and then it even got worse.
Oh, yeah. So it was about 6 months after I was canceled. The cancellation came at sort of a good time, I like to say, because we were still in lockdown, so I couldn't really work anyways as a non-essential worker. So the lockdowns lifted and CERB ended and all that, and I got my first gig with the Cowboy Junkies, actually. They... I was glad that somebody still wanted to work with me and knew I'm a good guy and knew that those claims were bogus. So went to the shoot. It was about 3 hours outside of Toronto. Had a great shoot. It was an awesome show we filmed. And then, that was my first shoot back after being canceled about 6 months after. And on the drive home, you know, these country roads, you don't see a car. You might see a car every 5 minutes or something late at night, right? So I see this car coming towards me, and the last second before she's about to pass me, we're both going like 100 kilometers an hour, and at the last second she just, it's like her wheel bearing gave out or something, and she just did a hard 90 degree turn into my lane, and I couldn't even put my foot on the gas. It was just like a quick, my life flashed before my eyes, and it was calm. It was almost like I just felt like, of course this is going to happen kind of thing, right? After all I've been through, my mental health has, you know, been destroyed, and now my physical health is destroyed. And that was another four months where I was off work, just sitting in bed. And at that point I was just at my lowest. I was just feeling suicidal, like just had no hope, right? Didn't have a lot of hope for Canada, didn't have a lot of hope for my business. You know, luckily, the truckers arrived. That was about, I guess, a year after I was canceled and 6 months after my car accident.
Let me just interject here for maybe some American listeners to the podcast, or someone from, I don't know, Thailand, not familiar. When we say the truckers, we're talking about truckers en masse descended on Ottawa in their rigs, initially to protest the vax mandates for and quarantining mandates for cross-border truckers, who basically, if you had an exemption, imagine these truck drivers are driving alone in their rig and they're being told to quarantine and so forth. So that was the tipping point for them. Many Canadians had already arrived at their tipping point. They descended on Ottawa, to stand up for all of our rights. And it turned into like a 3-week street fair with jumpy castles and impromptu ball hockey games. And we had truckers of all races, creeds, religions, male, female. They were clearing the snow and the ice off of sidewalks in front of shops. It was this incredible outpouring of love. So you and your father, you gathered on one of the overpasses on the, was it the 401 or the 403 as this convoy was going by, basically to cheer them on, right?
Yeah. So we were at the Hamilton Bridge. We hadn't decided to go to Ottawa at that point, but we wanted to check out the convoy as it rolled through, Hamilton, where my parents live. So, went and checked it out. And I think the biggest thing for me was just the sense of community and, you know, being with like-minded people who had been canceled and outcast and shunned from their family, lost their job, that kind of thing. I basically had lost, I was now an outcast from the music community that I was a part of for like 13 years or longer. I was just feeling very alone for a long time. So yeah, meeting all those like-minded people and the biggest thing was just how the news was reporting on it, right? All these people are racist, anti-science, bigots, misogynists. And that wasn't the case at all. When we went out there, it was people of all colors, you know, all religions, all walks of life. There was whole families out there, kids, dogs, like it was like Canada Day on steroids. And at that point, after the Hamilton Bridge, we decided we had to go to Ottawa. I didn't have much on my plate anyways, in terms of gigs. So grabbed my, you know, I had all this nice gear from doing the music video stuff for years. So I thought, somebody's got to document this properly, right? And I was still hurting pretty bad from my car accident, but I think the adrenaline helped me through it, because my camera is about 20 pounds once it's rigged out with the monitor and lenses and everything. So it was definitely a struggle carrying that thing around for hours in the freezing cold, but I think the adrenaline got me through it. And so glad that we went and documented it. Still so much unused footage that didn't make my documentary. So maybe one day there'll be a director's cut or something. A lot of cool footage with my dad that didn't make the documentary either. I've saved it all, categorized it, but there's all these great shots where, you know, I might be filming something happening and then I'll just kind of pan over to my dad at the end and I'll have this big smile or something. So I think at some point it'd be cool to maybe do a behind the scenes or interview my dad and, you know, show some of those moments or something. But one day when I have the time, and maybe that's another thing, I didn't really have a budget to work on this, right? So it was just doing what I can in my free time. And at some point I knew I wanted to get the documentary out there sooner than later. So wasn't even near finished, and I booked some screenings just to kind of put the pressure on. And I think each screening had a slightly different edit because I'd be editing it the night before and just tweaking it the best I could before each screening. But one day we'll put out a longer one that shows all the footage that we captured.
Unacceptable Views is the documentary, and we'll take a quick time out. We'll tell you how you can screen that and more of my conversation with filmmaker Mitch Fillion. Back with more in a moment.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
The truth goes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. Third, it is accepted as self-evident. You're listening to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Filmmaker Mitch Fillion is with us, and the documentary is Unacceptable Views. So you headed to Ottawa. Sort of along while the convoy was in its midst, right? While it was rolling down towards Ottawa?
Yep. Yeah, so we got there and pretty much just wanted to start interviewing the truckers. That's what me and my dad went three times on three separate occasions. So we went for the first weekend for about 3 days, then the second weekend, and then we were there the third week during the week when the weather was actually its best. We were pretty much out all day because it wasn't cold at all. And I think we left the day before the cops came in and everything got violent. Kind of glad we missed that, to be honest. I don't think I would have wanted to get pepper sprayed or to see. I don't think I would have wanted to be there. Even though, you know, it would have been nice to get the shot kind of thing. But luckily after we left Ottawa and I'd gathered all that footage, I met a bunch of other filmmakers who were there and who were there on that last weekend. So, you know, it was great to get that footage from them to be able to tell the full story. Cause you know, we obviously left before that all went down. It was pretty amazing to, you know, go out there on the streets for a couple hours and see everything going on and then head back to the hotel and see what the news was reporting on it. And it was just the complete opposite. It was almost a joke. Like you just had to be there to know that. I don't know how you could have known the truth if there wasn't as many live streams as there were happening. You know, you could pretty much tune in at any point of the night or day and see what was going on. But for the people who, you know, aren't really following social media, weren't following the truckers and were just watching CBC, like they made it seem like a horrible time. Like, you know, people were afraid to leave their homes and businesses had to close and all this stuff. But,
right. The business, we hear from truckers in the documentary and, also from people who were there in support, not necessarily truckers, that it was euphoric. this coming together. One of the interviews we've heard talking about, you know, Quebecers and Albertans getting along. Yeah. Like, when does that ever happen?
Yeah.
Have some trucker. I mean, he looks for all the world like a redneck, and he's embracing a Sikh.
Yeah.
You know, in an urban.
Yeah.
Was it? I mean, was that just? Were those just isolated little snippets, or did you feel that? Did you sense that when you were there? Did you witness that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've seen so many grown men hug and cry in my entire life. Especially like these big burly guys. Right. Funny, quick aside, when one of them came to see the first screening we did of Unacceptable Views, which we did at Jonker Trucking, he said he actually had to excuse himself. One of the truckers came to watch the film, and he had to excuse himself halfway through because he started crying, and he's like, I don't cry. Like, I'm, you know, I never cry. I'm this big, you know, burly bear of a guy. So he went to his truck and cried in private, and then came back to finish the film when, cause he was a little embarrassed, but, it was an amazing time. Like, you know, some people say they were afraid to go out, like the residents of Ottawa, but I mean, there were these platoons of cops, you know, like 10 to 12 cops on every corner you would walk. Like, I think I would have felt a little less safe just at like a music concert, you know, just running around with this expensive camera. I would have felt a little less safe because my dad would stay back at the hotel sometimes when I'd go out at 10:30 or 11 at night, and I'd be carrying this like $20,000 camera. And never once in my mind was I concerned that, you know, something was going to happen to me or the camera. Or...
Well, according to the data that I looked at, the crime was actually down. Street crime was down during the length of the occupation, as the media calls it. And early on, and some of the truckers alluded to this in the documentary, there seemed to be a lot of cooperation between the truckers and the police. There was one trucker who was in communication, I believe, with a sort of a liaison, an OPP liaison officer in Hamilton.
Yeah.
Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, that was Harold Jonker. Yeah, he was, I guess he was the head of the Niagara convoy. And they were in constant contact with the police, like when they were coming through Hamilton and when they were pulling into Ottawa. You know, they pretty much told them where to park. The relationship, as far as I know, was pretty good until that last weekend. They were handing out some tickets here and there, but a lot of them didn't even have, like, they weren't filled out properly, so they didn't even seem legit, kind of thing. They were just maybe scare tactics or that sort of thing.
There was a lot of poignant interviews in Unacceptable Views, the documentary, but I was particularly taken with the people who had come from Eastern European countries who had lived under communism. There was a Polish woman.
Yeah.
There was the East German. Was that Mr. Jonker?
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay, but there was an East German trucker who came from East Germany, lived under East German, you know, under the... And then the Polish woman. Talk to me a little bit about what they were talking about, these Eastern Europeans who lived under communism.
Well, you know, they left to come to Canada, the land of the free, and it's just they see the same things happening here, the same kind of warning signs, and I don't know. They definitely come from communism, so like we should take take their word for it. I don't know.
Yeah, they've seen this movie before.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and it doesn't just happen overnight. It happens sort of incrementally.
Mm-hmm. And they also said that the truckers were anti-science, but as you see in the documentary, Dr. Paul Alexander, Dr. Hodgkinson, and Dr. Byron Bridle, they were willing to meet with Dr. Tam and others to discuss the pandemic response. But of course, you know, Dr. Tam and them didn't show up, and we know why they didn't show up. And that's because the science isn't on their side. Right. So, They can call us anti-science all they want, but we're the ones that are, you know, bringing the facts, and we're there willing to debate.
It's not just truckers that were maligned and were accused of having unacceptable opinions and unacceptable views, to quote our prime minister. You also interview some nurses.
Yeah.
One in particular who worked in a long-term care facility that was fired.
Yeah, Sarah Shajunian. Yeah, she, you know, she knows that the government doesn't really care about these old people. So when the pandemic happened and the narrative was, you know, we need to shut down the economy and the world just to protect these old people, that was kind of a big red flag for her, right? And yeah, really, we should have kind of taken a more targeted approach like that, you know, instead of locking down everyone, kids from school and all that. But it was just brutal. Like, I mean, a lot of these older people, you know, the only thing they look forward to is their family coming to visit them. So when that stopped, like, a lot of them just started deteriorating very quickly. And yeah, she was witness to a lot of that. Some of them just, some of them just, you know, wasted away just because they had nothing to live for, basically.
And because she objected to this, and she either attended a rally or spoke at a rally, she was fired 3 days later.
Yeah, I think it was Halloween of 2020 or something. She first spoke out and was fired almost immediately. But yeah, Kristen Nagel is the other Canadian frontline nurse that I interviewed. And she was at some of the first rallies that I filmed too. She's been out there, you know, protesting against the masks on kids and the lockdowns for kids. And
they've been totally vindicated.
Yeah.
Totally vindicated.
Well, there was another, I don't know if it was New York Times or what, but there was an article basically said the mask mandates did nothing, you know, so what did we learn or something like that? And it's like, well,
that was a huge meta-analysis study of a bunch of RCT studies that showed the mask mandate did next to nothing or nothing, yeah, including the N95.
Oh, wow.
Made no difference. And then the New York Times, just like last week, came out with a study confirming, or reporting on a study confirming, that natural immunity from a prior infection is just as good or better than having two vaccines. And yet, as when people tried to bring that up during the vaccine passport, you know, the mandate, they were again dismissed as conspiracy theorists. So more vindication. Mitch, we'll take another time out, come back and discuss unacceptable views right here on Strange Planet.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Filmmaker Mitch Fillion is here, and his new documentary is Unacceptable Views. How do we screen it, Mitch?
It's at rumble.com/citizencamera. And we're up to, I think, like 127,000 views since its release in December, which is awesome. Thanks for watching, everybody.
All right. The link is in the episode notes in the description. So just click on that and it'll take you right to rumble.com/citizen camera. Again, it's called Unacceptable Views. Do you want to share maybe another, I'm about maybe a quarter, almost a third of the way through the documentary. Some other highlights, some other favorite characters that you met while you were up in Ottawa filming?
Yeah, so not only are there truckers and nurses and doctors in the film, we also had ethics scholar Dr. Julie Panessi, who was basically fired for doing the job she was hired to do, you know, teach about informed consent. And then we have a human rights lawyer, Nia Singh. We talked to the Sovereign Siva guys, the Sikhs that were making samosas, I think, and handing them out to the truckers and freedom fighters. A lot of great people. Like I said, it's just the sense of community is amazing. And even, you know, even when I would have events for kind of the music video stuff, you know, if I would make a little music documentary or whatever, I wouldn't really get a great turnout, even though I had, you know, this big community of clients and everything. But now with the freedom community, I mean, the turnouts are just amazing. You know, you can really rely on these people to show up and to show their support. So I feel the last few years has really shown a lot of people's true colors and shown who my real friends are. So it's the one good thing that's come out of it, I guess.
Right. You happen to land an interview with Max Bernier, People's Party leader Max Bernier, while you were in Ottawa?
No, I didn't actually. I met him for the first time on the James Top Walk, so I got some footage of him there. Still in the process of editing that stuff, though, so that'll be coming out soon, our James Top interview.
All right, this is the Canadian Armed Forces veteran who, well, he was not a, he was still an active member of the Armed Forces, and decided he was going to march from Vancouver to Ottawa, and was refusing the vaccine, but he was doing the march in uniform, and so that was considered offside. I'm not sure exactly, were they trying to court-martial him? I'm not sure what happened with that.
Yeah, I'm not too sure the details, but...
let's see, what else did I want to ask you about the
Well, I'll just say the Jonkers, who I interviewed for the film, I think they had probably the largest truck presence there. They had like 11 or 12 trucks. And then I also interviewed Ben Froese, who was the boom truck driver there.
Oh, yes.
And apparently they had a permit to set up a stage outside of Parliament. And then when they got there, the permit was all of a sudden no good or something. So they called upon him to become the center stage for all the speeches and everything. So
just a quick side note on the crane, the gentleman who erected the crane and was going to drape a huge Canadian flag. I'm not sure whether it was the Toronto Star or one of the daily papers took a picture of that and claimed, because at the end of at the cable, there's a little ball that you attach whatever to. They claimed that that was a wrecking ball and that this crane was supposed to, it was going to try and, I don't know, smash the Parliament buildings or one of the government buildings or something. You know, they just didn't understand. No, that's where you attach the flag.
Yeah, well, it's just a way to keep tension on the line, not to wrecking ball type stuff. Yeah.
Were you there when the Confederate flag showed up or the Nazi flag showed up?
No, I wasn't. But in all the footage I've looked at, I mean, I cannot find any racist flags or symbols. It seemed very convenient that, you know, they got that photo that they did. There was the guy with the Confederate flag that had like a truck on it as well or something. And he was wearing a balaclava while he's walking through. And in the video, you can see everyone is kind of calling him out, like, get out of here kind of thing. Right. So you could tell that the people weren't in support of the flag. And I'm sure the same sort of thing was happening with the Nazi flag guy, even though there's no video that I found. But walking around with the balaclava when everyone else, you know, all the freedom fighters don't have a mask on or covering their face, it seemed really suspect. How easy would it be, right, to send an Antifa or whatever in there to make it look bad? Just like on January 6th, there was a couple, there was the leader of Insurgents USA, I forget his name, John something. But he was there, you know, on January 6th wearing a Trump hat and trying to make Trumpers look bad, smashing the windows, all that sort of thing. So it's very easy to plant an agent provocateur, right? But for the most part, everyone there, like, you know, there was even LGBTQ flags flying, and yeah, there is just all love.
One of the truckers who was on center stage got up and made one of the first speeches, I think, and talked about how, you know, we're here to stand up for Canadian rights and protesting and so forth. And he said, we've already won. Just give me your thoughts on that. Was he right? Did they win?
Well, I don't know if at that point other convoys around the world had started, if that's what he was getting at. But yeah, just, you know, getting the world's attention. And I think that's what he meant. Like, we've won, just we're here and we got everybody watching us, right? All eyes are on us from around the world. So.
Any thoughts on Christine Anderson, the member of the European Parliament who came to Canada? She was so inspired and she spoke out in the European Parliament against Trudeau's governmental overreach and his authoritarianism. And then when she came here, she wanted to meet the truckers. I had her on my other radio program. And then, of course, she was she had dinner with three conservative MPs. And then came the hit piece in the Toronto Sun from I call him Canada's version of Roger Stone. That would be Warren Kinsella, who was a liberal strategist who basically admits that's what he does. He slings mud, even if it's not true. And he went after the conservatives who met with Christine Anderson, accusing her of being far right, and accused the Alternative for Deutschland party of being Holocaust deniers, none of which is true. I mean, you can go and you can check the actual speech made by the ADF leader in 2013. Mm-hmm. He said the exact opposite of what Warren Kinsella accused him of. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it just seems like it's the same playbook that they're always using, right? The racist card kind of thing. Even calling, you know, Trudeau calling Leslyn Lewis a racist. It's just, and you saw the same kind of stuff in the States, right? It's just whenever there's a black conservative, you see the liberals. It's like it's okay to be racist towards black people if they're conservatives, right? But yeah, Christine Anderson was kind of a hero for Canadians, really standing up in European Parliament saying, you know, Trudeau, you're a disgrace to any democracy. please spare us your presence, kind of thing, right? So I think, you know, Trudeau kind of had it out for her after her saying that. So I don't really get that statement from Pierre and the conservatives, because it's a lot of people that were supporters of him are like, what are you doing here, right? Like, she's on our side, she's a freedom fighter. So
here we are at just over a year, 1 year anniversary of the Freedom Convoy. Do you think it's changed anything permanently in this country?
I don't know. I feel like the truckers kind of, so many protests have happened after, right? And they just keep getting bigger, and they kind of normalized like the whole getting together for these like big events and gathering. And yeah, it just keeps happening, but it's just in different ways, right? Like, you know, whether it's Bright Light News putting on an event, I filmed one recently for them in Hamilton at the Zoetic, had a bunch of doctors there. We just got to keep holding these events, keep gathering together, and that's the only way we're gonna make a difference, right? We can't just sit around and wait for something to happen, kind of thing.
The public inquiry into the Emergencies Act, which was invoked by the Liberal government, it used to be called the War Measures Act, first enacted by the Prime Minister's father, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, in 1970 during the FLQ crisis. It was renamed the Emergencies Act. We had bank accounts of Canadian citizens who supported the truckers frozen. We had private property confiscated. Then we had the public inquiry, and many people were really hopeful that this would expose the Trudeau government, and of course it went the entire, well, it was seen as vindication, really, by Trudeau, although Justice Rouleau suggested he made the decision that the Emergencies Act was justifiable, but he did so reluctantly. Mm. Your thoughts? Did you see that public inquiry report as a defeat, or how did you see it?
Yeah, a little bit of a defeat. I mean, like, you had CSIS and a bunch of like the RCMP saying that it wasn't justified. So I don't really know how Rouleau came to that conclusion after everything we've seen. I was quite shocked for sure.
How about for you personally? Are any of your former colleagues who canceled you, are they coming around at all? Do you notice, a sea change in anyone's attitude now that a lot of this stuff is coming out? We're getting vindication from, you know, whether it's about natural immunity from a prior infection, whether it's about the origin of the COVID vaccine or COVID virus, or about masks, the efficacy of masks. Is it changing anyone's mind?
A little bit here and there. You know, some people are waking up, but a lot of people are hesitant to admit that they were fooled, right? Or admit that they, you know, ruined a good friend's life for politely trying to tell the truth and get the truth out there. And you know, I try not to go about it in a, like, I told you so way, even though, you know, part of my like pain body kind of feels like I should, because it's like, you guys, you know, called me a racist Nazi, destroyed my business. I was really like in the darkest place in my entire life, but I still, you know, I still want to, I don't feel like an I told you so is the way to go about it, you know? I try to kind of release the info here and there. I have a band account just for my own personal band that's kind of separate from my, my live music video stuff. And on there, I have, you know, some of the people, some of my clients following. So I just try and sneak some stuff in here and there, especially when it's like a New York Times article or any of these mainstream media publications that they trust. Right. So I always kind of, well, here's your favorite newspaper, and now they're saying what I said 3 years ago. So yeah, people are waking up, but it's, you know, it's like, it's easier to fool someone than to convince them they've been fooled. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So none of the people that canceled you, the former friends and colleagues, have apologized?
No, some of them have reached out saying like, I miss you and, you know, it'd be cool to hang out, but they still kind of drop in like, even though I don't agree with your ideology, it's, you know, it's not like a full apology. It's kind of like a half-assed sort of thing. It seems to me like they're just trying to make themselves feel a bit better maybe. So yeah. There hasn't been a whole lot of people coming and apologizing, but, you know, I've made a lot of new friends through this and continue to. So, yeah, onwards and upwards, I guess.
Unacceptable views, and you can see that on Rumble. Just click on the link in the episode notes. What's next for Mitch Fillion?
I think I want to go back into, I did make a 9/11 documentary before the pandemic in 2019. And it was banned from YouTube and Rumble, which is kind of surprising, the free speech platform. But it was more so kind of a made for YouTube documentary. I'd like to do one in kind of the quality that I did on Acceptable Views, get maybe a sit down interview with Dr. Judy Wood and some of these other researchers. I'm friends with John Hutchison these days, so I'm always CC'd on the emails he sends out to scientists and all this stuff. So.
Last I heard of John, he was out on the Gold Coast in Oregon. Is he still there?
I'm not sure where he's living nowadays. He was in BC back in the day when he had his apartment lab, I think. And
that's right.
Had all the defense companies and aerospace companies visiting him. But it was all a hoax. Yes. It was all a hoax. They just wanted to come see the hoax, right? It's ridiculous. Even the guy who wrote the book about Hutchison, I contacted him and he basically said that the effects of this on the steel were real, because I even have some of Hutchison's steel samples. He said the effects were real, but he thinks that Hutchison was doing it all with his mind, like telepathic powers or something. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Because the guy that wrote the book, I'm blanking on his name right now, but he actually was the one that kind of facilitated all these aerospace companies to come visit John and all this stuff. Not too sure if I can trust his word, but John is quite the interesting character.
Mitch, it was great catching up with you again. Thank you so much.
Great chatting with you. Thanks, Richard.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.